Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast.
So why are we here today?
So we're here today because we've been invited by Adoption UK in Scotland to do a special podcast for education in Scotland about thinking differently in education.
Well, that's really exciting, and it's really unusual for us both to be out of the house.
I know, and in my manner.
Yes, we've actually met some Indigenous Scottish folk.
And what did you say? They all sound like they want to kill you.
Yeah, I feel slightly intimidated by them, but that's maybe me rocking that stereotype, which is just shocking.
Yeah, we'll wait till the end of the day when my actual Scottish accent comes back and I have my kilt on again.
Again. Both emotionally, physically and metaphysically. You've got your kilt on. I have to say, it's really interesting to be here because it feels like there's a very different flavour to the AUK Scotland. And it's distinctly different, isn't it? Is it a different organisation?
No, well, it's, I mean, well, when I worked for them, no, it wasn't. But they are kind of in Scotland. And obviously, there's some kind of local, well, when I say local, it's mainly differences. Because, you know, the systems are all different, aren't they? So Wales, Northern Ireland, Scotland, England, all very different. Yeah. So therefore, organisations need to be different. And also, on top of that, you have the kind of independence of the kind of, you know, so in Scotland, as an example, a lot of the funding that people get, actually, you have to be based in Scotland to get some of that funding. So,
which makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So therefore, when we say Adoption UK in Scotland, it is part of Adoption UK in the same way that probably other charities and organisations are, but they have a director here who would deal with the day-to-day running
of the organisation. So it's together but apart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I feel like a politician saying, together but apart.
Yeah. Let's not talk to politics, please.
Please, no.
Please, no. No.
Well, that's really interesting. So there's a few guests here today, aren't there? So we're going to we're going to track some people down. There's Louise Bomber and there's a Scottish Parliament.
Yeah, we're not going to get her. I've been told already we are definitely not getting her.
I think that maybe if we're cheeky, we could get her.
Yeah, we should have. Well, you know, I mean, you know, you could be go off and be cheeky.
Right. Well, we'll try
that. When would you know a politician to willingly talk to anybody?
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's us, and let's crack on and see if we can find some people.
Yeah, we shall. Let's have coffee first, though. Yeah.
Let's do that. Yeah. Let's go and get some coffee.
So I'm joined by Fiona Aitken, who's the director of Adoption UK in Scotland. Thank you for sitting with me for a couple of minutes, Fiona.
Thanks for having me.
So what's today all about?
So today is our conference, Adoption UK Scotland's conference. It's called Thinking Differently in Education. And it's really an opportunity to bring together lots of different people, parents, professionals, teachers, head teachers and other organisations who work with people in schools to share some good practice, some good ideas and think about how we can differently support children in school who might need a little bit of extra help.
So that said, because obviously we see education all around the UK as being an issue in adoption, so what specifically is different in Scotland? Is it further advanced, would you say, than England in terms of the understanding of it with ACs and all that sort of stuff? Because to me it seems like Scotland is kind of leaping forward in a lot of ways.
I mean, I think it's difficult to say. There's certainly been a national movement towards having a greater understanding of the impact of adverse childhood experiences in Scotland. And on a national level, the government is acting upon that, and there's lots of steering groups and lots of thinking groups and so on. But as we all know, that's only as good as what the teachers are implementing in the classroom. We do know that there's an awful lot of schools who are doing things in a really important and different way and supporting. And actually today, the chair of our conference is a head teacher, Nikki Murray, who has successfully set up a trauma-informed primary school, and that's made a real difference to the kids that attend it. So that's one of the reasons that we wanted to bring him along today to get him involved, because I think teachers and head teachers can learn so much from each other. We don't want this to be setting people up to fail. We don't want this to be a situation where we're saying it's really difficult, you're not doing things right, but we can't tell you how to do it right, we're just telling you you're wrong. What we want is to make today not about, you know, finger pointing, you're doing things wrong, and talking about all the challenges and so on. I mean, obviously it's important to identify and establish this is the reason why care experienced and adopted children have difficulties in school, because there are still some people who just don't get it, who still see adopted children as being those that have been saved by lovely families and are now in a happy place and their forever family and being looked looked after and everything's fine. But obviously, we know that the early experiences don't leave children. Mm-hmm. And those who are still looked after, those who are still in care at the moment, and those who have been in care at some point in their lives are going to live with that for the rest of their life, and they're going to need that extra support. So we really wanted today to be a positive event, you know, a chance for people to come along and say, this has worked for me, this might work for you. We've got this afternoon, we've got some really excellent workshops lined up, talking about different stages of education. We've got a high school one, we've got one around teaching children specifically with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which is a big thing for adoptive families, obviously, and for care experienced children as well. But this afternoon, we're also going to be following that up with something that we're calling an inspiration cafe, which is a bit kind of like speed dating or a world cafe idea, where we've got people coming along and just having 15 minute slots where they're talking about things that they do in their organisations or things that have worked really well in their schools, just to get a bit of an overview, but to give people some ideas, because what we're hoping is that people go away with some ideas for today that they can implement immediately, either with their children to tell their children's schools or in their own classrooms, that they can make a difference.
Mm. I'm glad I didn't have any questions for you, because you seem quite able to talk.
I'll stop any time.
So I just wanted to pick up on one thing you said there, because you used care experienced and adopted children. Is that something that kind of agencies, charities, all that sort of stuff is more conscious of in Scotland and working together? Because I know certainly in England, whilst some agencies try, it's adoption is adoption, care experience is care experience, and kind of they're not really working together, they're not like connected, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, in Scotland, the term care experienced is actually supposed to encompass adopted children. But we do find that there is still a bit of a misconception about whether or not adopted children fit within that label. So when we're talking about things, to just be more explicit, we tend to just, you know, add on and adopted children, just to make it absolutely clear. But I think, to be fair, for example, today we've got the Minister of Children and Young People coming along, and she's going to be speaking a little bit about the Care Experienced Children and Young People's Fund, which was a fund that was specifically set up by the Scottish Government to support children in schools.
Right.
Now, it very explicitly states that adopted children fall underneath the label of those who should be supported by that fund, but we know that schools are not necessarily picking up on that. So that's why it just feels like there can be a bit of a gap. But I think, you know, to answer your question about whether or not people are working together and seeing them as all being part of the same group, I think in theory that's what we're working towards, but you know, in practice it does mean sometimes you have to just shout that little bit louder and just make it clear, which I think, you know, across the board we probably all have to do with adoption, don't we?
That's cool. And we're going to be talking to some of the guys from the FASD hub later as well, so, and you said one of the workshops is going to be about FASD and stuff, so what are the other workshops? I know there's one outside, I won't be going to that one.
That's the one I'm taking part in, I'm very excited.
You've got your thermals.
I have. I've got my waterproof trousers with me. I know. Yeah. I'm like Action Barbie. we've got an FASD workshop. Say we've got one about going into high school, which is about the transition.
That's
about
some of
thinking differently about children in high school, because that's obviously a big challenge for a lot of adopted children, care experienced children. We have one about creatively supporting children in primary school setting, which is going to be facilitated by Nikki Murray, who's obviously today's chair. And we also have a home education workshop, because we do know that a lot of children who are adopted or looked after might benefit more from having education either provided flexibly in a flexi kind of style of doing so many days in school and so many days at home, or just home educated, and an outdoor play one, which is going to be delivered by Smart Play Network, which we're really excited about, because forest school, I think, it's been something that we hear a lot about with our children, and it does seem to be really successful. There's just something about not having the boundaries of the classroom walls.
Old friend Fiona Aitken, thank you for chatting to us for a few minutes.
Thank you so much for coming today. That's we're so pleased to have you here. Hope you enjoy the day.
We will.
Hope you learned something.
Yeah, we will. So I'm joined by Simon Cawthorne now, who also works for Adoption UK. And what involvement have you had with today, Simon?
Hello, Scott. Great to be interviewed by you and Al. Lovely to see you both. My role in today's conference has been to co-facilitate everything that you see happening today, if I say so myself.
The slave with the broom and the coffee.
Well, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I built the hotel as well, everyone knows. You know. But between myself and my colleague Alison, we have been responsible for getting the workshops arranged. We've been getting the venue. We have been all the nuts and bolts that goes on into a conference, which is why I'm no longer 6'8".
So having been there, I know that that can be very stressful to organise.
Broad shoulders. Yeah. Broad shoulders.
So are you a bit tired today?
I was up until quite late last night writing my workshop. Please don't put that out, because I am the consummate professional.
That is going on. So your workshop then, that's really what I wanted to speak to you about.
Yes.
Because I think that generally we talk a lot about primary schools.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're doing one about high schools. So
that's
do you
want
to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we were struck as parents at how different high school actually was as an experience for our daughter, and also as a couple of parents. You pretty much go from a very supportive situation, and you have other folks in the playground that you see quite regularly. You have fairly good communication from the primary school. You have lots of things which basically just cease to exist practically overnight by the time that high school comes along. So the differences between primary school and high school were fairly significant, and we were fairly unprepared as parents to have that kind of cliff edge that's communication and involvement dropped off. It was a little bit worrying as well, because when we went for our first initial kind of transition days as parents, we were speaking to the pupil support and we were putting in words like attachment to see if they had any clue whatsoever, and no, the blank faces were quite alarming. There seems to be, and this has been backed up by other parents, by the helpline calls that we get through Adoption UK in Scotland, that there just isn't the awareness once you actually move to high school that there seems to be in primary school. Hence the reason for today's conference, really, to try and promote that in as many different ways as we possibly can.
So tell me about some of the content in your workshop, because obviously we're not going to record that, but it'd be good for others to think about.
One of the things that we've actually tried to do is that we've tried to incorporate the voice of the young people. So we're quite fortunate to have quite a group of volunteers and family members who are happy to allow their children to participate in events where they actually get to share the good things and also not such good things about their experiences. The workshop picks up on some of that, giving the young people a voice, because you can't deny them what they say. And then we're moving on to areas of strategies for transitions, some of which are very familiar with parents who have children at any stage of education or just as parenting in the home. But some of them are a little bit tweaked towards teens as well, because it gives a whole new dimension, being at school and being a parent to a teenager. Apparently, I don't know. Yes. Yeah. It's all rose.
Quite easy myself.
It's all rose petals in our house. Yes.
So I think we're going to join that workshop actually, because that seems to be something that I think as parents we know that high school can be a tricky.
One of you could do that. The other one could go to the outdoor workshop.
We could, but
because it's quite nice outside. And it would be.
Is there axes?
I don't know. We usually
axes,
we frequently use whittling knives, but whether Sharon has for your listeners' benefit, I actually, as well as working for Adoption UK, I also work for the organisation providing the outdoor workshop. So providing play opportunities for the outdoors and welcoming children to the benefits of being outside. And part of what we do sometimes is that we interest them, just as we would with adults, in a very controlled and safe way, the use of knife work, fires, axes, lumberjack stuff.
The stuff that worries me.
I mean, I'm not meant to be interviewing, but I'm going to butt in. I find that really interesting. Why do you do that? I can guess, but what is is there a therapeutic benefit in?
I don't know necessarily whether there is a therapeutic benefit as such. I'm sure there is. I would imagine that you'd be interviewing those colleagues as well from Smart Play Network. So they would be able to give you a take
on
it.
Good name drop there.
Yes, thank you very much. That's all right. I'm on commission. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And it was, the therapeutic benefit is very much the fact that you are entrusting children to find their own way. You are trusting them to do things that might others are afraid to do. When you start mentioning, often we find when I'm working with the other job that you have to convince the parents actually more so than you have to convince the children. Climbing a tree is a great way of fine honing motor skills. You know, we often find that play and not just axes and all that and fire, it's a great way of actually getting social skills to improve and to nurture, because it is the play that the children want to do. It's not what's being led by their peer groups necessarily. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, the play is the thing that the children want to do, and they make new friends, and, you know, they improve the social interactions. And it's play, you know, no one's going to die, you know, mm. there's, you know, if we're doing it right.
Awkward pause.
Never happened on my watch.
So St. John ambulance. Over here,
I'm a first aider. It's fine. But no, we have had children falling out of trees. But you know, providing they're okay, which they all are, you know, they just learn not to stand on that type of branch again. And again, I wouldn't necessarily call that a therapeutic benefit, but there are significant benefits to actually finding out what you can and can't do. Because once you can explore in the outdoors in a safe environment what you can do, then you can transfer those skills. Yeah. It brings confidence to the individual, and you know, the skills that you learn outside you can bring inside.
Because I think it's interesting, I've read a little bit about it in general, that you've this idea that if you manage risk for children, they don't know how to manage risk.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
So if you don't let children climb trees because you say that's not a safe tree, but if you let a kid go up a tree and then it branches down and they fall off, they go up. That's not safe trade.
There's a it's sort of funny and horrific at the same time. There was a child who we'd been working with for quite a while, and he also went to the after school club, and he'd been working with us, and he'd been climbing trees, he'd been doing all the stuff that, you know, building tarps, you know, dens and all this kind of stuff, and you know, that sort of thing, and he came out with the after school club once, and he was told to get down from a tree that he was climbing. So I went up to him and said, you know, what's going on? Oh, you know, I've actually got brittle bone syndrome. And it's a case of, what? You've got brittle bone syndrome? And he actually, but the thing was, he actually came to me later on and said, well, actually, I know I said that, but my mum tells me to tell you that so that I don't do things that are dangerous.
Oh.
And it's a case of,
wow,
you know, that was wow.
Isn't there a name for that?
Munchausen.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, but you know, that is an extreme example of the kind of barriers.
It's more about the parents' anxiety.
Frequently, absolutely. Your children inherently know how to play. Yeah. And the sad thing that we encounter sometimes when we go into schools is that you get that pregnant pause where the children are confronted by things that don't have an on switch, or it's not prescriptive like a football. Or a tennis racket, and you know, it's loose parts play. It's a bunch of scrap. You know, it's the kind of things that a generation ago people might have found and played with in the streets, all, you know, found their own entertainment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, within a few sessions, a few hours, kids are just easily at home with it, and just their imagination is just fantastic.
Yeah. And that, I mean, yes. I don't know about the academic studies, but it feels therapeutic, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
We trash your tree with a stick. You know?
Well, it's
outside play, isn't it? You know, I mean, as you know, we've just recently, a year ago, moved away from where we lived for 10 years, and little man found it really difficult because he had no friends when we moved to, and he's now got a friend, and they're out there, they're in the river next to his friend's house, they're climbing the tree, they've got they're digging a trench which is 6 foot deep at the minute. We're a bit worried about that, to be honest.
Okay.
When does a trench become a crisis?
Exactly. Especially when they're carrying axes and knives about, you know, that kind of way in there. They've built a World War One kind of frame around it and all this sort of stuff. But actually, the difference in him doing, there is quite a big one there, considering we live in the Republic of Ireland and his friend's Irish. But the difference in the little man doing this again is just massive, absolutely, because he's outside again. And it does make a difference.
We see, you know, it's one of the best parts of the job for me when I work outside with the children is actually seeing their developments from being very introverted, very shy, very isolated young people, and you know, it's generally primary school age that we deal with, and you know, within 6 months, you know, if that long, you know, they're completely different people, completely different people, in a very positive way.
Well, we may invite you back to talk about some stuff like that in a different episode.
If we can talk about axes.
That's okay. Listen, I can talk about axes until the day is done.
Right. Well, I'll turn this off and we'll cover.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Simon.
You're very welcome.
Well, I think it's going okay, apart from I have to... Yes, exactly. Yeah, and then the steel drum band were having their half an hour, and then
it's
the kids
like a Macy's
next
parade.
It is, isn't it?
From Thanksgiving.
I know. So I apologise if that's interfering.
To be
people.
Fair, when you did open this one, there was a lot of background noise because you were kind of roving mic, weren't you? So.
Oh, now you tell me.
Yeah, well it was. Did you not listen to it back?
No.
But yeah, it's gone all right. We've spoken to.
Yeah,
some really informative people.
My real aim today is to get Louise Bomber.
Yeah,
no. Is to track
her
down.
To go and rugby tackle her to the ground. Should have brought Jake.
He could have rugby tackled and I could have stuck a microphone in his nose and said, tell me some things.
By the time she'd actually dragged herself to the door, you'd have had a full interview. And also, who was the other? Oh, we got to speak to the chair of the conference.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I think he's a little bit like Stuart Guest, but the Scottish version, if that makes sense. but that's just in my head, because, you know, I only know Stuart Guest as someone who's publicly saying this is what I'm doing. There's probably hundreds of head teachers that are doing the same.
Yeah, but I guess he's that's who he is. He's kind of, and he's an adoptive parent. He's got that slant, which kind of adds a bit of weight to what he says, doesn't it? Yeah. No, I think it's really interesting just hearing what's going on. I really like what Simon was saying about the... just this different way of thinking, but also the high school thing, which I think is just massive.
It's huge for everybody, and I think we need to kind of focus in a little bit more on the high school side as well, and try and get, because, you know, you see it every day. Everything's fine, and then all of a sudden one thing will happen and it just turns everything on its
head. We've excluded your child.
I
think that's it, isn't it? You've hit the nail on the head. It's there's often this idea of we'll see how it goes, and if you want you can come and see this person, and then it escalates, or they don't notice these low level things that a primary would often catch, being much more pastoral environment.
And we're getting a free lunch as well, so,
it cost us our soul, we had to come here and do this. We've done really well to get these people. Let's get some more people.
Let's go and rugby tackle more guests.
Guerrilla podcasting.
Yes, exactly.
Here we go.
Well, hello. We're speaking to Marie Todd, who is the Minister for Children and Young People for Scotland.
Absolutely. Lovely to meet you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. The question we wanted to ask you was, there's two questions actually. The first one was, what was the key driver for you being here today? Because it's not often, especially, you know, this is an amazing event to come to, but it's quite small. So for us who kind of experience these things in England where ministers don't show up, what's the difference for you in Scotland?
So there's a number of things in there. Children and young people are at the very heart of this government, and our commitment to improving care in Scotland and to making care the best it can possibly be and the best in the world is absolutely core to this government's aims. So this is very, very important to us. The other key thing is that this conference is about education, and we are very focused on education. We're very focused on closing the education attainment gap, and that's absolutely what this conference is about. We want to understand good practice, and we want to recognise it, and we want to share it. And I think it's a real passion for all of the government. I mean, I have the best job in government, because the whole government is committed to it. It's not hard to gain attention for this cause. We're determined to make things better. The other thing is we've come on a journey in Scotland, and we are starting to really improve things. And part of that is because we have been listening so carefully to children and young people's voices. And you heard that again today at this conference. It's been absolutely key to starting the transformation in Scotland. Yeah. It's really powerful when people who are care experienced speak, and it's very, very important for us as ministers and government to hear that and to reflect on it when we're thinking about moving forward.
Can I ask, I appreciate this modern societies, there's a lot of cynicism about politicians, and we see that every day all over. What was one of the key messages that you wanted to get across to the people who attended, and what do you want them to take away? How do you kind of convince them that you mean what you say?
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? So we're in the midst of a general election period, and authenticity has been really challenged. But I think you can see the Scottish Government has a track record So the Scottish Government talks about this stuff, and we do this stuff. And that doesn't mean that everything is perfect in Scotland, very far from it. But we are absolutely, we are committed to making it better. And I think, I mean, you'll see within the Scottish Government, people like me who have a background that's before I came into politics, 20 years working as a mental health pharmacist, there's a great deal of expertise in our politics in Scotland, and a real different flavour perhaps, and a real authenticity. And do you know, the common goal, whatever your politics, so let's step aside from you know, party politics, across the board, I think you'll find in Scotland that people are driven to make Scotland better. So whatever party they come from, the same goal, we just have different means of getting there, and there's an awful lot of talent and creativity and determination to reach that for all of us. We have a vested difference. We're quite a small country, and you know, we'll feel the difference. If Scotland gets better, we'll feel the difference. There's a, you know, there's a vested interest. I come from the Highlands and Islands, you know, I want it to flourish. So there's also a connection. So we have a very precious thing in Scotland where there's a connection between people and the government and the parliamentarians. Again, because we're quite small, it's easy to eyeball someone in authority, and it's easy to, you know, I meet folk in Tesco's every week who will ask me about government policy, and I think that's a healthy and a good thing. But it's there's a shared endeavour, actually, which is a precious thing, and I recognise, particularly at this moment in time when there's all the tribal politics going on of a general election, that shared endeavour between the government, the politicians across the parties, and the people of Scotland is a powerful and healthy thing.
We took you off adoption there, didn't we? I'm sorry about that.
No, I just want to say thank you for being accessible. If this had been Tesco's, we'd have been sorry, didn't we?
It's unlikely we'll meet the Children's Minister for England in Tesco's, is it?
Maybe Waitrose.
Maybe Waitrose. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
No bother. Thank you.
So we're here with the chair of today's conference, and I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Nicky Murray. I am the head teacher of Burnside Primary School in Carnoustie, and I am the chair of this brilliant conference.
So what made you agree to chair it today?
Well, initially I agreed to present and was asked to chair, and I thought, I've never done that before, so that's certainly a bit of learning for myself. But I like to take opportunities where I can try and influence people's way of thinking. So any opportunity that I have to share or practice, I take, I try and avail myself of that. So,
and it's just past lunchtime now, so what's been the feedback today so far from what you've heard?
Very positive. A lot of people have come up to me saying that they weren't aware that schools could operate in the way that we've shared, and it's about a frustration on some people's parts about where the current education system is with regards to being progressive in the health and wellbeing agenda. So I've received quite a lot of positive feedback about what we've done.
Good, and there's quite a mix as well. There's parents and kind of professionals, I'll say that, but you know what I mean, teachers.
I think the questions from the parents are interesting. It's about how do they engage with schools to ensure that their needs are being met, and one of the things I spoke about was about control and influence, and there's things you can control, but there's actually quite a lot that you can influence, and that's about parents taking agency in terms of their own learning through organisations like UK Adoption to try and improve their understanding so they can communicate more effectively with schools, and that's only a good thing in terms of schools meeting the needs. Opportunities that I've got to share our practice has actually influenced people across not only Scotland, but this week I was in Sunderland, and previously I was in Newcastle. I'm going to Dublin as well, in London. So that's an opportunity to try and, you know, try and inform people and share what we're doing.
Because it's quite a crossover, isn't it? It doesn't matter what country you're in. I think you know, adoption is adoption in each.
That's really insightful, because that's exactly the impression I have when I went to Newcastle and went to Sunderland. It's the same tensions, it's the same frustrations and dilemmas, and the same resources, the issues with resources, and what you do to try and meet people's needs. So everybody's in the same boat, I think.
It's interesting you didn't mention Dublin, because I live in the Republic of Ireland.
All right.
So we obviously use the education, the high school education system over there for our youngest, and I think you'll be surprised at how far behind they are. I just said that out loud. So Burnside, in Carnoustie.
Yep.
I'm only saying the word Carnoustie because you sounded very Scottish when you said I sounded a little less Scottish. But so tell us about it. How long have you been there? What?
Well, I've been there for 4 years. It's a large school with 500 children in it. It's an area where there is deprivation, mm-hmm. And it's the largest school that's serving the Carnoustie High School. So I've been there for about 4 years, but recently I've moved into a position with the authority to support schools and share some of our practice wider.
Right, okay. And I heard you use some examples earlier. I'm just going to say the words so then you can explain the stories maybe. So you mentioned a gate, mm-hmm. and you mentioned milk.
Okay.
And they were quite... just in terms of the way you run your school, that just seemed really relevant to me as an adoptive parent. About so, do you want to?
So the gate aspect is about standing in front of the school premises. It's about 150 yards away from the school building, welcoming all the parents and grandparents and children in every morning, and that was a conscious decision to communicate to the community that they mattered. Mm-hmm. You matter to me even before you actually set foot in the building. The content from Louise was talking about the regulation and the reasoning from Dr. Bruce Perry, the four R's, resonated with me because one of the aspects that I do to try and de-escalate children or to build rapport is really to do unorthodox things like, come on, let's go for a walk. We'll walk along the local shops and get a pint of milk. It's not really about the milk, because we have about 10 pints of milk in the staff room. It's about actually, let's try and get you out of that situation so that we can have time and space to actually repair, mm-hmm. And talk through some of your worries. And I think that's really about being creative, but putting relationships right at the very heart of what you're doing, and really trying to understand that what we're engaged in is a human, it's really about human service, where you're trying to bring about a humanity to what you do on a daily basis.
And what's been the feedback from the general population, parents and grandparents at your school? Because it's not just about adoption, is it? Because this can translate over into...
It's been overwhelmingly positive. You get a lot of anecdotal feedback like, oh, you're not a normal head teacher. you didn't, but it's in a good way because they're basically saying that if they're not in my school, it's like, oh, I wish our kids were going to your school. Okay. So that's good in a way, but actually it probably makes me more motivated to try and share some of the practice and some of the learning, because it's some of the things we've got right. Yeah. Some of the things it's taken us a while to get to the point where we can say we've got it right. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for your time, and enjoy the rest of your chairing.
Thanks for the opportunity. No worries. Thanks very much.
I'm really excited because we're speaking to
Louise. That's an understatement.
Right. I am really excited because I'm speaking to Louise Bomber, and you are someone who's I don't want to blow smoke up your backside, but I think that people see you as someone who has got real insight and perhaps started the change from schools that weren't understanding. You were one of the people at the front of that push. So thank you for coming on and agreeing to speak to us.
Oh, that's my pleasure. It's good to be here.
So can you tell me what were you speaking about today?
Well, the conference was thinking differently about education, and so I was basically getting relationships back on the map, I suppose. That's what the main topic is. It's about us using ourselves to be the human bridge between insecurity and learned security, and for education staff just to realise what a pivotal part they can play in this recovery journey that these children are on. It's not just over to the psychologists, not over to the parents, it's all of us are part of this. I really believe it takes community to help with recovery. So I kind of just went through some of the challenges that we have in classes and some practicalities of how we can get alongside children and help them with that.
So can you give me some examples of the challenges that you're seeing and those practicalities?
One major one is the fact that children, because of what they've experienced, relational trauma and loss, they move into something called blocked trust. So there's a real big distrust in adults, and obviously in our schools, we very much operate from a, I'm the the leader, I'm the teacher, I'm in control, you know, you do what I say, usually in a traditional school. With these sorts of children, I'll just get their backs up immediately because, you know, they've come from a place of powerlessness. Powerlessness is at the very essence of trauma. And so we have to be very, very creative about how we kind of tame them into relationship so that they don't feel threatened, because obviously we know relationships are needed for healing and for recovery, but relationships are also triggers, and then get triggered very, very quickly, feel very threatened very, very quickly, and feel like you're trying to get into their head or you're trying to do something to them, manipulate, control them. And so we have to just work very, very gently. So it's kind of like being strong with our gentleness, gentle with our strength, trying to support them into relationship. And so one of the key things I want to, you know, I suppose communicate to schools is that we need a key adult. We need a teaching assistant or a mentor who can be part of a team to provide that wraparound care in school, where we can actually give them someone to practice with, because they're not going to just, it's not like a cognitive thing. We've got to actually give them a relationship to practice with. So give them a relational experience so they realise that this relationship is really different maybe to what they've ever had before. So I was talking today all about surprising the brain, you know, like they might not realise that adults can bring safety, that adults can bring regulation, that adults can bring joy. So we're kind of challenging all of that, like their preconceived ideas, so to speak, of how humans operate. Yeah. And we know that they need relationship in order to be able to recover, to thrive, to be able to function in this world. Mm. And so teachers can play a really big part in that if they understand the fear that is below this distrust. You know, it's not personal. We can get caught up in time warps because these children kind of project onto us what they've lived. And it's trying to help teachers realise, you know, that's what's happening, and that they can do something about this by being playful in their attitude, by being responsive, attuned, you know. Yeah, bridging the gap.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, I mean, obviously today you had quite a captive audience because people had come with the specific, let's think about education differently, but generally, do you find teachers are quite open to this kind of stuff, like out and about, you know? I'm not saying you just speak to random teachers in the street, but, you know, are they quite...
Well, to be honest, it's the missing piece, right? Because we weren't necessarily trained within our BEDs, you know, and within education training in this whole area of child development, attachment, neuroscience. And so we've just been doing the best we can with what we know.
Yeah.
And so I think people are just like, you know, tell me more, you know, particularly around the neuroscience. They're very, very interested in that. It makes sense, you know, as soon as it's just like those light bulb moments when they start to understand about how nervous system operates, how we have different nervous systems and what goes on in particular interactions, and how we need to have state-dependent interventions rather than there's just one-size-fits-all, which unfortunately is around in a lot of schools. It's like, got one behaviour policy, this is what we do, and yet actually we need to start bringing in differentiated discipline and differentiated emotional, social tasks and expectations, because one-size doesn't fit all. Mm-hmm. People have had all different kinds of lived experiences, and we need to respect that, and, you know, on a biology and how we function best as human beings. So my experience has been that people are really open and wanting to know more. We've got to get it into initial teacher training. We've got to get it out there more. There's a lot to do. Yes.
Can I ask, you were mentioning just briefly as you came in about this idea of parents of children being isolated. That's something that you were obviously quite passionate about.
I'm quite concerned. I've been getting increasing numbers of emails from parents around the UK who are just feeling really isolated, and are saying things like, you know, that people are, they're just losing their support networks, and that they're just finding wherever they are in community, it can be in a school, it could be, you know, out in a supermarket, in parks, whatever, that they're getting looks, you know, that just make them feel that they're doing something wrong, and that maybe there's something not quite right with their parenting, just because really there's a lack of understanding in our community right now about this whole area, about how trauma impacts the mind and the body. And so as a result of that, I just thought, what can I do? Because they were saying things like, you know, go and train up supermarkets, or, you know, can you go and do this? And I was like, well, I can't really do that, but then when I was thinking, when I was thinking about it, I was just like, is there another creative solution where we can realise that we're not alone? And and I just came up with this idea of a badge that said recovery in the middle and faces around the outside. So basically it just symbolises recovery and community, because we all know, don't we, that it takes a village to raise a child. And I just got together with John Timpson, who, as you probably all know, is an entrepreneur and adoptive parent, foster carer, as well as doing all his shoe shops around the country and a big and really leading in the area of trying to get attachment training into schools as well, like through the, you know, the Timpson Trust. And basically he got alongside and helped me to create these badges, which we're now taking, our training team are taking wherever we go in the country, and we're just saying, if you're in, you know, and you really get this inclusive revolution that we all want to be part of, we want to be making sure more and more people understand about the impact of trauma, then wear one of these, wear it with pride, and then we can support each other, you know, so we don't feel alone. And you know, because we need to be in this together. We can't support these children into recovery truly if we're just doing this on our own. We all need each other. So whether we're a parent, an OT, a, you know, a teacher, social worker, just somebody who just goes past in the supermarket, you know, we all need to be in this.
Almost like the sunflower lanyard thing, you know, I'm not comparing it to the same, but you know that person has something.
You just pause before you act. Can I ask you, I was saying that I first heard you speak 2008, and I've been a total fanboy ever since. Or fangirl, Scott tells me.
It's a thing.
Are you optimistic for the future? I mean, that's 10 years you've been...
11.
All right, okay. Where you've been pushing this message, and the message not necessarily changed that much, has it? Are you optimistic that we're getting somewhere? Do you think we have got somewhere?
Oh my gosh, yes. We're on the crest of a wave. It's like, you know, for such a time as this, it feels like, there are so many people, it's really gathering momentum, and more people are realising we've got to do something about this. It isn't just head knowledge, it needs to change our practice, our policies. It's growing, and there are more and more brave leaders out there who are standing up, you know, like Nikki Murray, those who've been talking today, you know, brave leaders out there who are, doing things differently, shaking things up and going, do you know what, we can actually help children to achieve by really supporting their emotional well-being and supporting relationships, promoting relationships and engaging in a different kind of education.
Because it's not just adoption, is it? Well, no, that's why we're here today, but it seems to me like when you start to look at any given classroom, the normal, in inverted commas, children, there's not very many normal children, is there?
No, we need to see children as individuals. They've all got unique stories. We need to learn them, you know, learn them individually. We can't ever get away from that, you know. You can read all the books in the world, but at the end of the day, you've got to learn the child that's standing in front of you, know what their stresses are, know what their karmas are, how do they function best, you know. We can learn a lot from Ken Robinson's work all around, you know, finding the element in the child and finding what is it that's going to help them through life, you know, what is it that makes them tick, that they're skillful at, you know.
Yeah. And that must be hard for teachers as well, because, you know, if they've got one child for a year, say in primary school as an example, and then the next year they have a different child, and they're in the mindset of just changing once, but they have to continually be updating their skills and knowledge and all that stuff. So that must be quite draining on teachers.
Yes. Unfortunately, class sizes are very big, and if I had it my way, classes would be much smaller. It would be a bit more kind of more family group-ish. But one way around that, obviously, is to create these small teams, which I've written around, where we set up like Team Lee, Team Grace, and we have a smaller family unit within the school, so that even though there is somebody changing each year, that we've still got some that are the same, some will remain, because we need to obviously be trying to promote permanency in schools rather than this kind of stop start. So rather than having fresh start as our banner over schools, we need permanency. Needs to be kind of our aim, I suppose. So there are some schools out there who are actually realising that, gosh, this child's got a really good relationship with, you know, Mrs. Burns or Mr. Hall, let's keep them with that class another year. You know, like in primary, that is easier to be done. You know, and good on them, because it's like, yes, the relationship really matters, and it takes these children so long to trust. So we kind of need to build those foundations and build on them.
I'm conscious that the taxi's been ordered for you, and we're holding the man at the door.
I've got a flight.
Can I have one last question?
£50
a metre is on £50. It's not our money, it's fine. I'm conscious that I speak to a lot of parents who say, I really struggle with my relationship with school. Have you got any tips and tricks for parents, carers, foster carers,
kinship carers. Any tips and tricks for developing, building, strengthening bonds with school staff?
It's a little bit like what you do with the children, to be honest. It's kind of like I'm DDP informed as a practitioner, and use PACE, basically, you know, communicate acceptance, you know, remember that people are doing the best they can with what they know. Sometimes people don't have access to the knowledge.
Yeah.
So, you know, start from a place of empathy and start from a place of really trying to understand their point of view first, because that kind of throws out the drawbridge to understanding between, you know, mutual respect. And then maybe just say, you know, would it be worth just, can we have a go at doing some of these things? Could we experiment? You know, I, again, I'm just a bit tentative and just say, why don't we try this? You know, there's no harm in trying, you know, and I think sometimes also drawing attention to other practice that's going on, you know, I've heard about this, and maybe just sharing resources as well, but doing it in a very kind of kind, compassionate way, because obviously teachers are working in traumatised systems. We need to acknowledge that, and there is a lot of trauma around. They're being evaluated left, right and centre, and we all know evaluation disables. So it's kind of just going kindly and gently. The more you build a relationship with them, just being human basically, the more I think that they won't feel threatened by you, and they'll feel like you're part of, you know, you're wanting to help and you are part of the team. You know, but obviously use resources. Some of the books I've written, for example. I wasn't doing it purposely. No, but there is a new book coming out in the spring. Discipline. It's going to be coming out.
Would you come on the podcast and tell us about your new book?
Yeah, okay. I might do, yeah, another time.
That wasn't a yes, was it?
No, I can. When I finish.
We do
final edits at the moment, yeah. But we're nearly done.
Excellent. Oh, and so what is that book going to be about?
Discipline. I'm going for the big D.
Ooh, that is
going to
be
a good one.
Yes.
Boom.
Yeah. What we do about discipline in schools.
I feel like we've got a scoop.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's called Know Me to Teach Me, and it will be out in the spring.
Know Me to Teach Me, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, is it pre-order on Amazon now?
It'll be soon. It'll be soon up there. Yeah.
Hot
You're the first to hear. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. That is fantastic. And thank you so much for your time. I know you're rushing to get a taxi, and there's probably a very angry Scotsman outside tracking you down. Safe journey back to wherever you're going.
Thank you for giving your time. Thank you
very much. Oh, wow. Yeah. Excellent. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So that was that.
Well, in many ways, you're right when you say that. Once again, your capacity for interpreting events is just genuinely amazing. Yeah. I have had, I'll be honest with you, Scott, we've run around like mad.
Yeah, we have
today.
Actually. And we had pie. Amazing pie.
It was lovely, wasn't it?
Steak pie.
And we met a fan, didn't we?
Oh, yes, we did. Actually, she said Scott Casanrini, and I looked at her and I was like, I don't know your face. And she could see from my face I was like panicked because I was thinking it was a tax man. And it wasn't. But not just any fan. She's just moved back from China.
Yes, so she was our
Chinese
Far Eastern fan. That's fantastic.
Amazing the people you meet.
It is amazing. Anyway, I think that today's been really good, and I really enjoyed speaking. Well, everyone, and I was genuinely made up about getting the minister as well.
I can't believe it. Oh, but I was told, no, you can't speak to the minister.
And I got a look that would curdle milk off the minister's aide.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was quite cool. It was quite funny, actually. And she was, she was friendly enough.
Absolutely fine. No problem.
We're not going to go down the politics road.
No.
Especially given the few days. Anyway, that was actually...
Or I'll have to refer you to our standards committee.
Yeah.
But generally, I guess education is a massive deal. And
it is.
I guess if you're listening and you're not from Scotland, everything is still relevant.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's you know, Nicky said the same. He's gone to different places, even in England and Ireland, actually, to kind of share that this can be done. And similarly to Stuart Guest, who we spoke to a couple of years ago now.
Friend of the show.
Yeah. But similarly to him, you know, it's a very similar approach. Mm-hmm. Everybody just wants to see these changes happen. And I think when you've done it, it's easier to convince people. And there's that crossover as well, because, you know, it's not just about adoption.
No.
I've been saying that for years. You know, if you were to look at the care experienced and adoption, the kind of the constituents of your school, shall we say, there's a lot of crossovers, even for, you know, people who've
huge
experienced you know, divorce and separation and all that kind of stuff. So it all kind of, it's all relevant.
Yeah,
it's just about being organised.
And we were having a chat over lunch, weren't we, with that, this idea about statistics that are thrown around about the comparison between adoptive children and compared to the general population. But actually, is there such a thing as the general population?
Yeah.
And all of the stuff that applies to adopted children often has huge benefits for a whole range of children who don't have that tag adoption,
exactly.
But do have similar or comparable experiences.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was that.
That was that then. So what should we do now?
Pub.
Yay. Yeah. Oh, shandy? No, I don't like shandy. Top
well,
deck.
I'm not on the shandy.
All right, okay, well, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm getting the train south and I'll head on south. Well, thank you. It's been a lovely day.
And it's been lovely to spend some time together. Yes, actually, I think this is apart from the wedding weekend, this is the longest we've ever spent.
It's quite scary, isn't it, really?
Yeah, therefore, it's definitely the pub.
Yeah, and the cracks are starting to appear, I'll be honest with you, over lunch. Look after yourself.
Buongiorno.
And Jovi.
Situation where we're saying it's really difficult, you're not doing things right, but we can't tell you how to do it right, we're just telling you you're wrong. We want today to be about actually things can be better. These are the
oh my god.
Wasn't that good?
That was really good. Yeah, and you're going to be like, what was I saying?
I'm really cross with the man with the block. I know it.
Mr. Alcor is making his presence known.
So has it been too long since you've got to speak, is it?
Oh, harsh, but fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tap fit.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there I was, mid, like,
I know,
you know,
that was really interesting as well. Really professional and profound.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, I know,
sorry.
That's probably the only time that you'll get me doing that today as well. Yeah. I can see by the tears in your eyes. You find that so touching.
And the thing is, this is going to stay in because it will make for a funnier podcast.
Okay, that's great. That's good.
Anyway, let's go back to being serious.
So back to the reason why we've got.